Wednesday, September 13th, 2023. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope whether you are at school or maybe at work or maybe you're just at home goofing off, I hope you are having a good week. Hey, we are halfway to another weekend, and now that football season is here, the sky's a little more blue. The birds chirping is just a little bit sweeter. The air is a little more crisp. I know it's still early, but having football back just makes the world a better place. Hey, I hope that you and your family and your friends are all staying strong and healthy right now. And I got to tell you how I actually spent the opening weekend of the NFL season, because it was a little bit different. Because see, Mrs. Daily Dose was actually celebrating a very noteworthy birthday. So, in honor of the occasion, we actually went out to Las Vegas for the big event. Viva Las Vegas! Went out there, met some family, met some friends, and yes, we went to Sin City in all of its disgusting, filthy glory. Like I said, we were fortunately joined by some amazing family. We were joined by some amazing friends. And we spent 3 to 4 days out in the middle of the desert, basically blowing money like a drunken sailor on shore leave. In fact, Daily Dose I-Team President Big Rob even made the trip. But we also had some family and very good friends join us out there as well. There was gambling. There was some drinking. We possibly took in a show, and we also watched a ton of football. We watched both college and we watched pro while, yes, in the casino, possibly gambling and or drinking. All in all, we had a really great time. We really did. And Rob and I enjoyed sitting in the sports bar and basically just making fun of everyone that we saw. Saw a couple of fans from some different locations that were, let's just say, having a great time. Saw some other fans from other locations that were having a horrible time, but it was highly entertaining just to sit back and watch. So on Saturday, we sat around watching college football, making fun of college football fans. On Sunday, the NFL season fully kicked off, and we were actually going to be flying back to Denver, but not until late afternoon, early evening. So we all kind of settled into a casino bar to watch my beloved Broncos take on who else? Yes, the Las Vegas Raiders. But of course, the game was back home in Denver. I was actually hoping when we booked the trip, maybe they would open in Vegas and we could go to the game. Didn't work out that way. So we watched the game from a casino in Las Vegas. Here we are in this casino. And this hotel casino that we are at is literally right across the highway from the Raiders Allegiant Stadium. That was the view that I had looking out my hotel window, was at the stadium of the Las Vegas Raiders. And all weekend, we're seeing like signs. We're seeing all these Raiders stores. We're seeing tons of Raider fans all dressed up, all wearing black, and maybe like a Chewbacca or C-3PO mask, whatever. And myself and some of the family members we were with, we were actually wearing our orange Bronco gear. So, of course, you know, we get some glares from the locals, but they were reasonably well-behaved, not really anything too rude. Well, the game begins on Sunday. And like I said, we're just watching from the casino within the hotel. And there are a number of fans from all over watching because there are just TVs on everywhere with every single game on. And the game begins, and we get a few Raider fans, let's say, acting up. Specifically, one elderly lady Raider fan who just keeps walking up to the TV screen and yelling at it. But she doesn't even really know what she's talking about. So she'll walk up to the screen in front of everybody and yell like, "Run up the middle!" on every single handoff that takes place. I don't know why. They weren't having a whole lot of success running up the middle, but she kept yelling it. And then she kept yelling, "Throw the ball to Renfro!" on every single pass play, despite the fact that Renfro barely played, and he didn't log a single catch on the day. Okay, whatever. Shoes is crazy. Okay, so at halftime, we're starving, and we need to go grab some food, but we don't want to leave the casino because we don't want to lose our spot, and it's pretty crowded. So we have some family members stick around, and they're going to keep our spot for us, and we're going to walk around and find some food to bring back so we can continue to watch the game. So we make our food run just before halftime. I mean, we're in Vegas. It's a Raider town, right? So we're walking around and we're hitting restaurants in the casino. We hit a few bars. And do you know what we found? Every TV that was on was not turned to the NFL. It was not turned to the Raider game. It was tuned into the U.S. Open tennis tournament. Okay, look, I get that there are a number of people in the general public that are into the U.S. Open. But I also noticed that the bars that were actually showing the NFL games were packed, and the places showing the tennis game had literally no one in them. But you know what? Here's my bigger problem. You can't claim to be a Raider town, Las Vegas, having signs up all over, we're a Raider town now, Las Vegas is the home of the Raiders, come buy our Raider gear, and not even show the Raider games! Of course, the game did not go well. My Broncos lost at the very last second, and we may get to that a little bit later in the show. But man, the city of Las Vegas is just insane. Like, nothing about that city makes sense. They have slogans like, the magic of Las Vegas. But the only thing disappearing is going to be your money. I'll warn you that ahead of time. Because of the whole pandemic thing, Vegas is gouging everyone right now. They say that in Las Vegas are the happiest casinos on earth, but when you walk around, most everyone in these places looks absolutely miserable. They also say Las Vegas is where the girls go to play. But let me tell you this. We saw an abundance of working girls out there in Desert Oasis. So it isn't all play. There's a fair bit of work going on in Vegas. And you know what? It doesn't seem like the kind of work that anyone in their right mind would really want to do. It seems like a shady, bad, disgusting job. Oh, but there's a number of girls doing it. So they can say it's where the girls go to play. It's also where the girls go to do some really gross work. And then Las Vegas claims to be a Raider town, but we couldn't always even find the Raider game to watch on TV. Finally, Las Vegas always tells you that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But I mean, I think we all know herpes and chlamydia will follow you to whatever little town you might be from. Oh, it's coming home with you like luggage. Don't believe the hype about Las Vegas. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com, where we have new articles going up every week. Speaking of my Denver Broncos, I actually wrote a little bit in yesterday's article about why the Broncos failed and what should we expect going forward. It might be a little bit of a different take than you're getting anywhere else. But over at DailyDoseSports.com, we also have links to the podcast, we have links to the YouTube videos, and we have links to Daily Dose gear. You need a t-shirt, you need a sweatshirt, you need a hoodie. It's starting to cool off a little bit. Go over to DailyDoseSports.com. You will find exactly what you need. Hey, today on the show, the college football and NFL seasons are still very young, I know. But, you know, we've actually already learned a little bit from what we have seen take place. No, I don't want to overreact. I don't do that. I know the worldwide leader in sports tends to do that a lot. I don't want to do that. But there is already plenty to take from what we have seen so far without overreacting. Plus, you know, over the past few weeks, we've been doing our college football preview. We did our NFL preview. And we haven't had a Daily Dose Top 5 for a little bit. So today, we will have the return of the Daily Dose Top 5. You know, you always have to stick around for that. But first, we do have a little bit of sports news coming out. And let's start off in the NFL, where the Kansas City Chiefs tried to hold out from paying defensive lineman Chris Jones for as long as they could. And then they actually played a real game And then they realized, if the Detroit Lions lit us up, what are other teams going to do? So the Chiefs immediately caved on Monday, and they gave Jones a one-year deal with a ton of incentives that would allow him to earn even more than the $19.5 million he was already scheduled to make this season under his current contract. But remember this. Remember that Chris Jones actually lost a lot of money holding out, because he did still have 1 year on his deal. So them getting him signed to just a one-year extension, yeah, that tells me something. That tells me that this is without a doubt his final year playing in Kansas City. I would expect him to have a really big year because he's playing for his next contract. But he's also been holding out. You never know if guys are truly taking care of themselves. Can he stay healthy all year? This feels to me like, okay, prove to us what you can do. Maybe we'll give you a bigger deal. But more than likely, I'm going to go somewhere else as soon as this season is over. And I'm starting to wonder, are we starting to see a little bit of that Patrick Mahomes contract starting to take its toll on what the Chiefs are capable of doing money-wise with their contracts? They've lost a few people. They could lose a few more. Staying in the NFL, former NFL defensive back Adam Pac-Man Jones was arrested early Monday morning after police responded to a report of an unruly passenger at a Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky International Airport. Authorities said Jones was booked on misdemeanor counts of alcohol intoxication, disorderly conduct, and terroristic threatening. That isn't good. An airport spokesperson said the police were called at 6 a.m. on Monday to help crew members with an unruly passenger on a flight scheduled for departure. And then they confirmed that Adam Pac-Man Jones was that passenger. He was arrested prior to takeoff. He was taken to Boone County Detention Center. Now, details about Pac-Man's arrest weren't immediately released, but Jones says that he was asked to be moved to a different seat because the phone charger for the two seats he had purchased wasn't working. And then he was told that they would have to turn the plane around if he wouldn't, you know, sit down and shut up. He vehemently denied being intoxicated, and he also rejected the terroristic threat allegations. But, I mean, the airplane crew, are they just making things up out of the air? Are they just pulling things and saying, oh yeah, I don't know, we just saw this guy, he asked for a different thing, and I don't know, we thought we'd get him arrested. It seems like maybe they didn't even know who he was. So everything about what Pac-Man is saying, I don't know if it holds that much water. Plus, we do know he has a little bit of a history of both drinking and of acting a fool. So this does kind of go in his wheelhouse, right? Following the arrest, though, Pac-Man would be released, and he would say, I'm hurt. This is very embarrassing. That is what he told WLWT-TV while leaving jail. Did you hear what I said? Pac-Man said this incident was embarrassing. Embarrassing for Pac-Man Jones. Remember that this is the same human being that was arrested for spitting in the face of a stripper back in 2006. No, this is embarrassing. This is the same guy that was making it rain by throwing hundreds of dollars on the stripper stage back in 2007 in Las Vegas, and then becoming enraged when the dancers began to pick up the money, becoming so enraged, in fact, that he began bouncing one of the girls' heads off the stage. I'm going to be real honest here. Getting angry at airport personnel might be one of the least embarrassing things in Pac-Man's life. I don't know. He says he's embarrassed. I don't get it. Dude needs to get his priorities straight, because this is the least of what you've done, Pac-Man. Moving over to the NBA, we had a little bit of bad news this week. Houston Rockets guard Kevin Porter Jr. was arrested and charged with assault and strangulation after an incident at a New York hotel. This also took place on Monday morning. That is according to the New York City Police Department. Police responded to a 9/11 call reporting an assault at 6:45 a.m. Can I just ask people, both of these were early in the morning. Why are you already drunk that early? Like, if you shut it down even at, I don't know, 2 in the morning, aren't you starting to sober up a little bit? Little note to the young ones out there. Try to be sober by 6 a.m. Bad things happen. Anyways, New York City police arrested Porter and his girlfriend. Porter is just 23 and an investigation is going forward. Both charges against him will be felonies. Now, this incident involved Porter's girlfriend. Wait for it. A former WNBA player, Kaiser Gondrzik, who actually played for the Indiana Fever. Upon arrival, officers were informed that a 26-year-old female sustained a laceration to the right side of her face and was complaining about pain to her neck. The spokesperson said a preliminary investigation on scene determined that a known individual struck her multiple times upon her body and then placed his hands around her neck. The woman was transported to the hospital for evaluation, according to the police. We are in the process of gathering information involving the matter of Kevin Porter Jr., said the Rockets in a statement. We have no further comment at this time. The NBA also acknowledged Porter Jr.'s arrest, saying in a statement that the league office is in contact with the Houston Rockets and they are in the process of gathering more information. Now, you might not realize this, but Porter signed a 4-year contract that is worth as much as $82.5 million just last year. It's a pretty good contract for a young guy. But Porter has a history of off-court issues. He was drafted number 30 back in 2019 after spending just 1 year at USC, where he was suspended for conduct issues as well. He then played his entire rookie season for the Cleveland Cavaliers, but he didn't join the team for the next season because, again, he had some personal reasons, they said. He was traded to the Rockets for a top 55 protected second round pick in January of 2021. And that was after apparently this dude got in a shouting match with Cleveland team officials. Hey, let's be real clear. Mr. Porter clearly has some temper issues that he needs to address. But in all this whole story, am I the only one kind of surprised that this is a WNBA player involved? Is that just me? Also, that she seemed to be on the losing end of this. Like, that surprised me too. One, I was shocked. Guy dating WNBA player. I didn't even know they knew they existed. And two, she lost, apparently. Kind of shocking, at least to me. That was a bit of a surprise. But the other thing that stands out about this whole situation is how much the NBA actually pimps the WNBA. Hey, watch the WNBA. It's great. Hey, are you watching the WNBA yet? Hey, why aren't you watching the WNBA? It's so good. They're always trying to convince us to watch it. Meanwhile, their own players are literally choking the WNBA out. Does this strike anyone as being maybe like a tiny bit hypocritical? Maybe the NBA needs to have some new slogans on their warmups. Remember they were putting slogans on their warmups and on the courts? They had like warmups saying, say her name. I mean, maybe they should have said, say her name while you're choking her. I don't know. Maybe instead of we can't breathe, they could have put she can't breathe. I don't know, just lobbing out ideas. Or perhaps instead of the WNBA going with that slogan, we got next, they could change it to we got next as long as the NBA doesn't sock us in the face and choke us. But NBA, go ahead and feel free to keep preaching to us about how we should watch the WNBA while your players are literally choking them out. No, you're doing well there. It's all working.
Thanks for supporting the WNBA, sir.
You betcha. It's a nice break from the male sports I usually watch.
You like male sports?
Oh, sure. Speed walking, ballroom dancing, rhythmic gymnastics, extreme choir.
Okay, coming back. The NFL season is now fully underway. The college football season is rolling right along. But what have we learned so far from these two very young seasons? We're going to discuss a few things that we've already actually been able to figure out. We're going to get to those when we get back. So the 2023 NFL season kicked off last Thursday as we had a very, very interesting game take place between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Detroit Lions. And then we had a full slate of games on Sunday. We had a really wild finish on Monday. And don't get me wrong, it's going to take all season to try to figure out exactly what is what in this crazy league all year. And hey, I said it before, I don't want to do the hot take thing. I don't want to do the hot take overreaction. Hey, does this mean this team is this because of what happened in week one? No. Week one is sometimes a complete aberration. We have seen a team look terrible in week one of the NFL season and then go on to win the Super Bowl. So you can't tell everything about the season from one week, obviously. But we can learn some things. And I just want to take a look at some of the things we actually did learn this opening weekend in the NFL, or at least we got a bit of a hint about them in this opening week. And one of the first things that we learned was that the best thing that Aaron Rodgers did in a New York Jets uniform was run out of the tunnel. Because then Rodgers suffered a blown Achilles tendon on just the third play of the game in that Monday night game against the Buffalo Bills. So Aaron Rodgers finished the season with a stat line of 0-for-1 for 0 yards. And then the Jets actually went on to steal an overtime win on a wild walk-off punt return by an undrafted rookie by the name of Xavier Gibson. But as exciting as that is for the Jets, that doesn't change that this is bad news for them. Because now they still have to go back to the guy in Zach Wilson that they literally were trying to replace with Aaron Rodgers. So now what? Hey, Zach, you were our guy the whole time. No, he clearly wasn't. Now, you can do it for a week. You can do it for 2 weeks. But losing Rodgers? No, that's going to sting. It's going to sting a lot. Hey, not only was Rodgers looking sharp in the preseason camps and everything, he had looked good in the preseason games that he did play. He had his teammates and he had his coaches believing, hey, we're contenders with him. We are absolutely going to be a Super Bowl contender because we have that guy in the pocket. And how could you blame him? He was looking great. But now that's not the same. And you can tell yourself, hey, nothing's changed. Zach Wilson is showing some promise. He was getting better. That's all well and good, but things have changed. And it's a massive change. Because if something goes wrong with Aaron, you kind of figure, hey, he'll stable the ship. Don't get too excited. Relax. That was Aaron Rodgers. Zach Wilson, I don't know. What have we seen the last few years? He's a young, inexperienced guy. He's probably going to make some young, inexperienced mistakes. And no amount of what we won game one without him is going to change that. The Jets are now a different team. One brief side note. I know that there were a number of Green Bay Packers around the country that were all excited when Aaron Rodgers actually went down with a season-ending injury. By the way, completely classless. I heard a number of people, even in sports news, talking about that. It wasn't like he blew his Achilles because he didn't get the vaccine. Slow down. But one of the crazier things is that by not playing at least 65% of the snaps, the Packers actually drop from getting a first-round draft pick to a second-round draft pick. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers kind of screwed the Packers in a completely different way by going down with that injury. We also learned in this week one that, like Tom Brady, Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, he has his very own Eli Manning, I guess you could say. He has that one guy that, for whatever reason, whenever they face each other, he might be great, but he can't beat that guy. Remember, Tom Brady would go through these seasons with the Patriots. He'd be rolling. They'd be undefeated even. And then they'd play the New York Giants. He would face Eli Manning, and Eli Manning would best him in not one, but two different Super Bowls. And now here we are with Patrick Mahomes. And Mahomes looks like that next era great quarterback. He's going to be the guy. He's already got two Super Bowls. He's a young man. But for some reason, Patrick Mahomes can't beat Jared Goff, of all people. Do you realize that Jared Goff is now 2-0 against Mahomes. And in those games, Goff has thrown 5 touchdowns and his teams have averaged nearly 40 points per game. Hey, can you really compare Eli Manning to Tom Brady? No, not in terms of overall accomplishments. And yet, Eli did beat him twice in the biggest game. And for whatever reason, Jared Goff keeps beating Patrick Mahomes. I have no idea why. I have no idea how, but it keeps happening. And it happened again last Thursday. And by the way, in that game, the Chiefs looked very unchief-like. A lot of mistakes, a lot of penalties, drop passes, sloppy play. I don't expect that to last, but they looked really funky in week one. Not sure what's going on there. Might be having a little bit of Super Bowl hangover. And like we talked about in our NFL preview, at what point do you lose people within your organization that you do feel, that do hurt you, that do cause you to slip and stumble? I don't know. Maybe they finally lost the right people. They go to Jacksonville this next week. And while that used to sound easy, that's not nearly as easy as it used to be. Going to be interesting to see how the Chiefs now respond going forward. We also learned in this very young NFL season that Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, he might die. I don't know how to say it and be nice, but he literally might have some problems with his health this year. You know, every year we keep seeing the Bengals go out and they try to get Joe Burrow some more protection with his offensive line. Hey, they've got receivers. They've got a decent running back. They've got people around him. But that offensive line is a bit of a struggle to put together. And every year they make more moves. And every year the moves don't seem to help. The Bengals didn't just get beat on Sunday in their opener. They went to Cleveland and they got absolutely smacked by the Browns 24-3. Okay. That's not the end of the world for Cincinnati. We've seen the Bengals start slow the last few years. They kind of start slow. They figure some things out. They start to protect Joe Burrow. And then they get better and they rally. They go to the playoffs. They might even go to the Super Bowl. We've seen that before. We know that the Bengals are capable of getting their stuff together. Here's my concern. The amount of punishment that Joe Burrow already took on Sunday. You look at the box score and you say, oh, big deal. Come on, Clint. He was sacked 2 times. Big deal. No, you're right. He was only sacked 2 times, but he was hit 10 times. 10 times? That's a lot of hits for anybody, and that can't continue as this season goes. On the day, getting hit 10 times, Joe Burrow went 14 of 31 for 82 yards. Ooh, that's a bad sign. That's a really bad sign. That tells me also that he's dumping it off as quick as he can because he's getting hit so much. You know, I asked this question going into the season. What does running back Joe Mixon have left? He keeps getting in trouble off the field. Can he do something on the field? On Sunday, Joe Mixon had 56 yards. Hey, that's not going to cut it. The Bengals had better get much better up front, or this season is not going to go well, and they are going to be one of those teams that slides back during this year that a lot of people were saying, hey, maybe this is Super Bowl for them. Didn't look so good in the opening week. I'm not going to overreact to it, but I am going to look at it and say, you better figure out your offensive line because it didn't look good again. We also learned in week one that despite a number of so-called NFL experts telling us otherwise in the preseason, that Chicago Bears quarterback Justin Fields, yeah, he's probably not going to win the MVP award this year. I know there are a lot of people really getting hyped about Justin Fields. Have you seen this guy's film? He can do it all. He can throw it. He can run it. He can catch it. He can do everything. Yeah, it didn't look so good on Sunday. The Bears were taken to the woodshed on Sunday, 38-20 by the Green Bay Packers and Jordan Love. Not Aaron Rodgers. Not Brett Favre. And Fields threw for just 216 yards on 37 attempts. He ran for 59 yards. He didn't have a horrible game, but he did turn the ball over twice. Now look, I have no idea why so many people decided to jock Fields this year. I don't know. A lot of people did, though. A lot of people were like, hey, Justin Fields, it's going to be his year. This is the time this kid's going to shine. He still doesn't have many weapons. The Bears' best new player, according to their coach, DJ Moore, he had 2 catches on Sunday. I mean, the offensive line isn't great. Name another receiver or running back on the team. I'm sorry. I think the Bears might be in for a tough year. And if so, Justin Fields might be in for a really tough, disappointing year. Staying in that NFC North, we learned that the Minnesota Vikings' luck, yeah, might run out this year. Last year, and when you hear this stat, this really is crazy. The Minnesota Vikings were 11-0 in one-score games. On Sunday, the Vikings were in another one-score game, this time against Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Okay, this is going to go just like it did last year, right? The defense played reasonably well. Quarterback Kirk Cousins threw for nearly 350 yards. He had 2 touchdowns. The game was tied late. Mayfield leads the Buccaneers to a field goal. Okay, there's just under 5 minutes remaining. Big deal. Based on last year, the Vikings just win these kinds of games. That's what they do. The Vikings then proceeded to get the ball and go 3-and-out. Okay, that's going to hurt. We'll just get a stop against Baker Mayfield and this awful Tampa offense, and you can get the ball back and go in. Except that Tampa ran out the final 4 minutes by grinding out 3 straight first downs and ended the game. Now, maybe. Maybe this is just a goofy, weird, strange game. Or, and I'm just lobbing this out there, maybe the margin for error is so thin in the National Football League that going 11-0 in those close games was absolutely insanely incredible. Like, unbelievable. How they did that, I'll never know. But how many times can that weird oblong ball just bounce your way every single time? It can't keep happening over and over. At some point, the ball is going to bounce the other way, and if it does, you might be in some trouble. You went 11-0 in those games last year, but you've already started off this year 0-1. And what a difference a year makes. I feel like the odds, just statistically, are not in the Vikings' favor, and that doesn't bode well for them. That could be a bit of a problem for them, because last year they were so good in those tight games. We learned here in Denver. Yeah, I talked a little bit about this game earlier. As I watched my beloved Broncos out in Las Vegas, in the belly of the beast, if you will, with a city that could barely even find the game on their televisions, we learned on Sunday that Denver Broncos quarterback Russell Wilson, he may look different under new head coach Sean Payton, but the Broncos still have a lot of other concerns. And they fell in that game. On Sunday, Russell Wilson looked much improved. Let's get that on the record. He had much better footwork. You can tell Sean Payton has gone in there and said, hey, your footwork is bad. Your foot placement is bad. Your delivery is bad. Your mechanics are poor and they need to get better. He looked much better on Sunday. He also looked more decisive. He went back to pass. It didn't look like he was drawing up plays in the dirt. He looked back, check one, check two, check three, and let me start to move around and see what I can find. That's not how he looked last year under Nathaniel Hackett. Sean Payton is changing the way that Russell Wilson looks. But maybe more important than any of that is the fact that Russell Wilson was only sacked twice. I know, sacks are not always the most important thing. He was only hit 4 times, though. He didn't have a single turnover. Hey, that's improvement for Russell Wilson. I've told you all along, I believe that Russ can still be the guy, but you can't have him back there with PTSD just getting hit on every single play. I don't care who you are, you're going to eventually make mistakes. We saw that last year. This is massive improvement for the Broncos and for Russell Wilson. Unfortunately, the Broncos couldn't make big plays all day offensively. They had to grind and nickel and dime their way down the field. And the Denver pass rush was about as absent as like teeth at an Alabama game. So instead, the Broncos allowed the Las Vegas Raiders to make that late comeback. They couldn't stop them. Jimmy Garoppolo sat in the pocket as long as he wanted and found wide open receivers. And the Raiders beat the Broncos 19-16. And then Denver couldn't get the ball back. Their defense kind of let them down. Their offense didn't produce as many points, but they also didn't get very many possessions because the defense couldn't give them the ball back. The Denver Broncos are 0-1. But you can't really blame Russell Wilson for it. Plenty of blame to go around, but it looks like Sean Payton has improved him, at least early on. We also learned that some of our preseason predictions were actually correct. Yeah, I know we get some wrong here at the Dose, but we did get one exactly right. And that was that the Miami Dolphins are going to go as far as quarterback Tua Tagovailoa can take them. On Sunday, Tua and the Dolphins put on an offensive clinic against Los Angeles Chargers. Tua threw for nearly 500 yards on the Chargers. The Dolphins scored 36 points. They scraped past LA in the final 2 minutes. And in all, Miami had 536 yards. They averaged over 8 yards per play on what is a very talented defense, at least on paper. Talked about it beforehand. The Chargers look like an all-star team on paper. But get this, the Chargers failed to sack Tua all game. They only even hit him twice. Hey, the Dolphins flat out looked like a title contender on Sunday. And yet, when the Dolphins face a team that actually puts pressure on the quarterback instead of a team that just looks like they should put pressure on the quarterback, and they actually knock Tua around a little bit, I mean, everyone in the NFL is going to be holding their breath, right? Because we see how good Miami looks with him on the field. But we also know how susceptible players are to head injuries when they already have a history of head injuries. This is going to be scary to watch every week because I don't know that Tua is going to stay that clean every single week. There are some much better defenses coming. And when they get there, especially in his own division, when they get there, can Tua stay healthy? Can he stay on the field? I don't know, but the Miami Dolphins look really good when he is on the field. I'll give him that. Finally, we learned that the New York Giants might be in for a bit of a setback season. After going 9-7-1 last year and even winning a playoff game against Minnesota, this team sure didn't look like a playoff team in week one. And no, I'm not talking about a heartbreaking loss in overtime or something like that. No, this was actually worse. The Giants faced the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night. But they never even really competed in the game. The Cowboys beat the brakes off New York 40-0. The Giants allowed quarterback Daniel Jones to be sacked 7 times. He was hit 12 times. The Cowboys forced 3 turnovers. Now, remember, the Giants in that NFC East did have a little bit of a soft schedule last year. I don't think Sunday's performance guarantees that the Giants are going to be awful this year. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that the Giants, again, are going to have problems protecting their quarterback. And if that is the case, you're going to have a long year because they play a much tougher schedule. You're going to see much better defenses. And if you do, can you keep Daniel Jones upright? You don't have great receivers. So to stretch the field isn't always an option. It's pretty much Saquon Barkley, and if he can't get anything going, like he couldn't on Sunday night, the Giants just might crash back to earth because they sure didn't look like a playoff team on Sunday. Let's move over, though, to the world of college football, which just finished its technically 3rd week. And while we have a little bit more of a quiet weekend coming this week, there are some sneaky good games coming this week. Number 8, Washington goes to Michigan State. Michigan State hasn't really played anybody tough, but they've been winning. Number 8, Washington, looks like they could be a contender. Number 11, Tennessee, I think they are still quietly a sneaky contender to go to the college football playoff. They go to Florida. And we know that Tennessee hasn't always fared that well in the swamp, even though Florida is not what they used to be. And then I'm going to give you one other game to watch that might be interesting. Because number 4, Texas, is hosting Wyoming. And I know when you hear that, you say big deal. But remember that Texas is coming off of that big win against Alabama. Wyoming might be a little bit sneaky. They've got a good defense. Head coach Craig Bull coaches them up pretty well. I don't think they're going to be afraid of Texas. If Texas kind of doesn't show up, though, they might be a problem. But even though we're only 3 weeks in, we have already learned a few things this season. Let's take a look at what we learned. And the first thing that we have learned, speaking of Texas, is that the Texas Longhorns might actually finally be worth all the hype they get. You know, every year, going back to like, I don't know, 2009, I guess, we get told over and over and over, hey, the Longhorns are finally back. Every year. Not only do they lose two teams that we kind of thought they might lose to, then they also lose a few games to opponents that we never saw coming. We're like, okay, you lost to Alabama, but why do you lose to Kansas State? So it's not just the games that we look at and say, okay, well, they couldn't hang with the Big Ducks. No, they end up slipping up to a bad team too, and it keeps happening. But so far in 2023, they kind of look like they might be worth all the hype. Quarterback Quinn Ewers is playing the best football we've ever seen him play. Opening the season, Texas pummeled poor Rice. Okay, big deal. But then, they go to Tuscaloosa, and they hang the first double-digit loss on Alabama and Nick Saban that the Crimson Tide have had in over 2 decades. And now, Texas has 2 or 3 weeks against unranked opponents before that Red River shootout against Oklahoma. Now, in years past, these weeks coming up would be very dangerous to Texas. They get up for the big teams, but then they might slip up against the unranked teams. That won't happen again this year, right? They're better than that this year. In years past, I would fully expect it, but this year, I don't know. I'm starting to think Texas might be the real deal, which makes me feel pretty good because I did pick them to go to the college football playoff. We did also learn that the Pac-12 conference, I don't know, they seem like they want to go out on top this year. Yes, the Pac-12 is about to become the Pac-2 next year, but that conference is really playing well so far this season. It's kind of shocking, isn't it? Do you realize that 8 teams from the Pac-12 are currently ranked? USC is number 5. Washington is 8. Utah is ranked 12. Oregon is 13. Oregon State is 16. Colorado is 18. Washington State is at 23. And UCLA is at 24. That is an all-time high for this conference. The previous high was 6 teams being ranked from the Pac-12. Hey, maybe the Pac-12 is actually going to make some national noise this season. And yes, when that happens, the future of that Pac-12 is going to look very, very bright. At least for another couple of months. Speaking of the Pac-12, you know, one thing I've learned this year, Washington State, they just might be a sneaky team to watch in that conference. You know, it was one thing when they blew out Colorado State on the road to open their season. But CSU is a young team. They're still trying to find their legs. They don't have that much talent yet. So when the Cougars beat them 50-24, I went, okay, nice win. You're good, but I don't know how good. But then Washington State hosted number 19 Wisconsin this last week. And Luke Fickell's group at Wisconsin, they were kind of looking like maybe they could be a dark horse contender in the Big Ten. Maybe they would be one of those teams that kind of trips people up in the Big Ten. And then they went to Spokane, and Washington State forced 3 turnovers, and quarterback Cameron Ward, keep that kid in mind, he threw 2 touchdowns. The Cougars whipped Wisconsin 31-22. My only concern for Washington State, honestly, is that schedule is going to ramp up after this coming week pretty significantly. But after watching them whip Wisconsin, I'm starting to wonder if maybe they can hang with the big boys more than we thought. We learned Washington State head coach Mel Tucker, well, he's kind of a gross person. But, surprisingly, he actually might be getting done a little bit dirty. Okay, so Mel Tucker has been suspended without pay while Michigan State completes an investigation into claims, get ready, it's going to be bumpy, that he sexually harassed a prominent sexual assault awareness speaker after she was hired to address the Spartans team about sexual assault awareness. How insane is that? You want to talk about just being bold. Man, Mel Tucker has no fear whatsoever. Brenda Tracy, who operates a nonprofit company that tries to raise awareness about sexual misconduct, especially among college athletes, has told the university that Tucker sent her gifts, asked if she would date him if he wasn't married, and told you to get bumpy, that he may have pleasured himself while on the phone with her without her consent, according to details reported on Sunday. Now, Mel Tucker told investigators he took part in this behavior, but he said it was consensual. So now, Michigan State will have Harlan Barnett serve as interim coach, and they are actually bringing back former Spartan head coach Mark D'Antonio to serve as an associate head coach starting this week. You might remember D'Antonio retired after the 2020 season. Any formal decision on Tucker's job status is expected to be decided after this hearing concludes. Whatever happened here with Mel Tucker and Michigan State seems to be completely asinine, whatever he was doing, because you're involved in this kind of a situation. At work, never a good idea. You are married and doing this, apparently on company time, which is really gross all around. And yet, some of this case kind of doesn't add up, because we're being led to believe that Tucker did this, and that it wasn't consensual, and that she was just minding her own business on a video call, and all of a sudden Tucker is doing God knows what, and she's having to see it. And yet, she was still texting him up to 3 months after the alleged incident, and saying things to him like, I hope you have a wonderful Father's Day. Huh? This seems kind of weird, doesn't it? So what if, and I'm just lobbing this out there, what if Michigan State just wants to get out of this $77 million contract that still remains, and they've kind of found themselves a loophole to do so? According to Tucker, this whole thing was mutual. It was a private event between two adults living at opposite ends of the country. Tucker's statement says this: she initiated the discussion that night. She sent me provocative pictures of the two of us together. She suggested what she might look like without clothes, and never once during our conversation did she object in any manner or hang up the phone. I don't know. I think Mel Tucker might be an idiot. And also, this might have been consensual because she kept talking to him when she didn't have to. But either way, it's going to be ugly. And usually the university is going to come out on top, because he may have voided his contract right there and let them get out of it. We did also learn that Jimbo Fisher's hot seat down at Texas A&M, yeah, it's so hot now it might actually explode. Every year, we hear about these massive A&M recruiting classes that Fisher keeps landing down in College Station, and then the games start, and we see no evidence of it whatsoever. On Saturday, Texas A&M went to Miami to face another team that usually has a ton of talent. And once again, it was Texas A&M that got run out of the building. Miami rolled to a 48-33 win while racking up 451 yards. Texas A&M also committed three turnovers. Now remember, Jimbo Fisher is getting $94 million on a 10-year deal that began just back in 2021. Since arriving in College Station, do you realize his program is now just 40-22? For all that talent, shouldn't you be winning a little bit? For all that money, shouldn't you have something to show for it? Here's the problem. If they fire him this year, they still have to pay him $76 million to not coach. That's a ton of money. I know they want to fire him. I just don't know if they're committed to actually doing it and paying for it. Okay, coming back, we still have a few more things that we have learned in college football, And then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. We can think of a few college football programs that right now have a Heisman Trophy candidate, right? But how many right now have two? So let's finish up a few things that we have learned already in college football. And we learned that number 20 North Carolina's defense yet still doesn't seem to be very good. I know we were being told it was being fixed, but I don't see any evidence. You know, in week one, the Tar Heels held South Carolina and their quarterback Spencer Rattler to just 17 points. That's pretty good. If the Heels defense is actually competent even, quarterback Drake May, he's going to put up some points. That kid's pretty good. North Carolina can score. That's not the issue. Can they get stops? And when we saw them hold the Gamecocks at just 17, you went, hey, maybe they're going to be better than we think. If so, North Carolina could be a contender out in that ACC. But then we got to week three, and the Tar Heels faced Appalachian State. And I know that Appalachian State isn't, you know, little sisters of the poor. I get that. But the Tar Heels allowed 34 points to App State. And they had to hold on for dear life in double overtime to even get the win. And that's not good news for North Carolina. Not when you have good offenses. Teams like Miami and surprisingly Syracuse and Duke still to come. Let alone if you went on to bigger and better things. Because your defense still doesn't look all that fixed, at least to me. We have also learned that while the Big Ten and Big 12 look very strong at the top of their conferences, they also both feel really top-heavy and that they don't really have that much depth this year. You know, you go out to the Big Ten, you got number 2 Michigan. Hey, they're a title contender, no doubt. Number 6 Ohio State, don't forget about them. They've had some bumps a little bit so far, but they're still very, very good. They've got some really big games coming. And then you have number 7 Penn State. And Penn State is a team that I still think could be a playoff contender if things fall right for them. Okay, but after those three teams in the Big Ten, what else do you have? Minnesota looks pretty average. Nebraska looks terrible. Wisconsin's already lost. I guess you have number 25 Iowa, but they still can't score very many points. I struggle to have faith in them when they actually face good quality competition. So the rest of the Big Ten, it looks pretty average. And it doesn't look like there are any other teams in there that are even capable of contending with just the big dogs at the top. The east side of the Big Ten Conference is loaded with those three teams. And whoever wins it should be able to run roughshod over the west side. Because like I said, over in the west, the best teams you have are probably Iowa and Wisconsin. Very top heavy in the Big Ten. Meanwhile, it's a very similar situation over in the Big 12. Because you have number 4 Texas. Again, a playoff contender. They look very, very strong, but then it really drops off. You've got Kansas State down at 15. How much do you trust Kansas State? Do you really do anything? You've got Oklahoma at 19. Oklahoma hasn't been tested yet. We don't know what they really are capable of. It's hard to tell. TCU already has a huge loss. Baylor is 0-2. Texas Tech is 0-2. With the way that the Pac-12, the ACC, the Big Ten, and the SEC are going, it's honestly starting to kind of look like Texas had better keep winning or the Big 12 is going to get left out of the Final Four. Because right now, it sure looks like Texas is their only hope to have any chance at a college football playoff. Finally, we have learned that number 18, yes, I'm talking about my home state, University of Colorado, might have a surprise Heisman candidate. And by one, I actually mean they might have two. Quarterback Shedeur Sanders, son of head coach Deion Sanders, has already thrown, forget this, over 900 yards. He already has 7 total touchdowns He's only played two games. 450 yards a game and 3.5 touchdowns a game. That is what Shedeur Sanders has done so far. Sanders has shown a really strong ability to run that high-powered offense, to spread the wealth around, to make the right decisions, and he has a really nice touch on the deep ball. That makes him extremely dangerous. He can move his feet, he can slide, he can scramble, he can run if he needs to. Shedeur Sanders is making a statistical case to be in the conversation for the Heisman Trophy. He has yet to even commit a turnover, but he's not the only guy on that team. Because wide receiver slash cornerback Travis Hunter, he's making his own case to be the best player in the country. Travis Hunter is currently playing completely both offense and defense for the Buffaloes. He is averaging 134 snaps per game. That is a ton of snaps. So far, Travis Hunter has 7 tackles on defense. He has 1 diving amazing interception, and he has broken up 2 passes. Plus, on the offensive side, he also has 14 catches for 192 yards, and he's even played a little bit on special teams. Hey, when you think about it, Deion Sanders is kind of the perfect coach for this guy because he understands what he's going through. He played a little bit of offense too, but to perform this well on both sides of the ball, it is something that I don't know that we've really seen before. Not this much. We've seen guys do it. Deion did it. Charles Woodson did it, but they weren't playing every snap. Not even close. To perform this well and playing every snap on both sides of the ball, we have not really seen this before. But there could be a reason for that. I'm really not sure that this is sustainable. Hey, maybe Travis Hunter is just such a freak that he can do it. When he came out of high school, he was the best recruit in the country, bar none. He chose to go to Jackson State and play for Deion. Now he's at Colorado. Maybe he is just that guy. He's just, I don't know, Bo Jackson-ish. He's just such a freak, he can do it. But I'm also really worried that he may struggle to stay healthy the longer the season goes, playing that many snaps. Hey, I'm not rooting for that. I am hoping this kid stays healthy all year. I don't cheer for injuries ever. I'm just worried about it. Because if he does stay healthy, and he does keep playing like this, Colorado has 2 stars that have a legit shot of going to New York this December. Hey, this college football season has a long way to go, but we still have a few more interesting non-conference games to get to. And then we're going to start getting into those conference battles. And then we're going to start getting into some serious rivalry games that already starts at least a little bit this week. So we're going to continue to learn about who is who this season. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Okay, so we just talked about the University of Colorado having not one, but possibly 2 Heisman Trophy candidates this season. Shedeur Sanders and Travis Henry are putting up monster numbers, and they at least have a chance of getting an invite to the Heisman ceremony in December. But teams having 2 candidates, they're actually not all that common. In fact, going clear back to the 1940s, there are just a handful of teammates that have both finished together in the top 3 in Heisman voting. It just doesn't happen very often. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 counts down the last 5 times that college teammates finished in the top 3 in the Heisman voting. We start off at number 5. And we don't really have to go back all that far. We go back to the COVID season of 2020 when games were being canceled and games ended up being reduced. But in the end, it would be the Alabama Crimson Tide blowing out Ohio State in the national championship game. The Heisman Trophy award ceremony would actually be pushed back a few weeks for COVID reasons. And when the winner was announced, it would go to Alabama wide receiver Devontae Smith, who had nearly 2,000 yards receiving, and he scored an insane 23 touchdowns. Hey, well-deserving. But what was a little surprising was the fact that Devontae, a wide receiver, beat out 2 quarterbacks for the award. One was Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence, but Lawrence had missed some big games actually dealing with COVID. But Devontae also beat out his own Alabama quarterback teammate, Mac Jones, who finished third in the voting. It doesn't happen very often. But not only did two Alabama teammates make the top three, the wide receiver beat out the quarterback for the award. That is actually a very rare occurrence, and it comes in today at number five. We arrive at number four. And this time, we go back to 2005 and to the land of make-believe. All season, the USC Trojans had been the heavy favorites, and they rolled to the national championship game behind quarterback Matt Leinart and running back Reggie Bush. Well, Leinart was the returning Heisman winner. And we know Heisman voters don't like to just write the same story. So they had to do something different. In 2005, they gave it to Reggie Bush, who did have a completely insane season. I mean, Bush racked up 16 rushing touchdowns. He had two receiving touchdowns. He even took back a punt to the house. He was single-handedly responsible for nearly 3,000 yards. So instead of giving the award to Leinart in back-to-back years, which we know they don't like to do, the voters gave it to Bush. Leinart would finish third. Unfortunately for USC, at number two was a quarterback from Texas named Vince Young, who took losing as disrespect and went on to put on a show for the ages, leading the Longhorns to upset USC in the national title game. Oh, I know. The NCAA eventually got Bush on taking money or something, living in a condo from boosters, whatever, while he was at Southern Cal. Then they told us all to pretend he never won the Heisman. We're just going to pretend he didn't win it. But he did win it. And his teammate Leinart finished third, and we all saw it. And so it comes in today at number four. So we arrive at number three. And we go back, actually just 1 year previous to the Reggie Bush win. Because in 2004, we were still under that BCS system. So the voters would just pick two teams that they thought were the best and then have them play a national championship game. By the way, when you think about that, it's really stupid. Anyways, in 2004, the USC Trojans were rolling. They had gone 12-0. They were undoubtedly deserving of playing for the title. It was who they would be paired against that caused some controversy. Because you had Oklahoma out of the Big 12, Auburn of the SEC, Utah out of the Mountain West, and Boise State out of the WAC, all finishing their regular seasons undefeated. So, who gets the bid? Well, Oklahoma was ranked number two, but Auburn had played a much tougher schedule. So, the voters gave it to Oklahoma, and then USC ran them off the field. They laid a 55-19 whooping on them. But like we mentioned earlier, Matt Leinart would win the Heisman Award. But it was not actually two USC players that finished in the top three. No, it was two Oklahoma Sooners that finished second and third in the voting. Running back Adrian Peterson would get the second most votes, and quarterback Jason White would come in third. But didn't mean all that much because it turned out they couldn't hang with Leinart and the Trojans at the title game, and they got smoked. Oklahoma did have two candidates in the top three. Despite not winning it, they come in today at number three. So we reach number two, and we have to go back more than 50 years for our number two entry to find college programs that had not one but two candidates finish in the top three of the Heisman voting. We go clear back to 1972, and the Nebraska Cornhuskers were the preseason number one team. They had quarterback David Humm. They had running back Johnny Rogers, and they had nose tackle Rich Glover, and they were loaded. But the Huskers couldn't actually live up to the hype. In fact, they slipped up a few times. They lost their opener to UCLA. They tied Iowa State. Then they lost to Oklahoma in the big game and finished 9-2-1 on the year. The USC Trojans, meanwhile, would blow out Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, and they would be named the national champion. But the Trojans actually didn't have a single player even nominated for the Heisman. Meanwhile, Nebraska got not one, but two nominees. Running back Johnny Rogers would win the award with 19 touchdowns running and receiving. Oklahoma running back Greg Pruitt would finish second in the voting. And then bizarrely, the voters actually voted Huskers nose tackle Rich Glover third. He had won the Outland Trophy and the Lombardi Award. Doesn't that very often, but a defensive lineman finished in the top three. And for that, Nebraska comes in today at number two. So we reach the number one team that had two Heisman nominees finished in the top three in voting. And we have to go clear back to the 1940s for this last one. We go back to 1945 specifically for this team. Now, remember, this was immediately following the finish of World War II in August. So, isn't it kind of fitting? The Army would be ranked number one to start the season. They had a highly potent running attack. They rolled through the regular season with an 8-0 record, outscoring their opponents by a total of 412 to 46. They beat Wake Forest 54-0. They beat number 9 Michigan 28-7. They blew out number 19 Duke 48-13. Then they smoked number 2 Notre Dame, number 6 Penn, and number 2 Navy by a total of 141-13. Army led the nation with an average of nearly 500 yards of offense a game, including 360 yards on the ground. They were a unanimous number one choice by every voter in the AP poll at the end of the season, despite the fact they didn't even get to play in a bowl game. And both fullback Doc Blanchard and halfback Glenn Davis didn't just finish in the top three. They actually finished first and second in the voting, with Oklahoma A&M halfback Bob Fenimore taking the third spot. Blanchard would win the award with nearly 1,000 yards rushing while averaging, get this, nearly 12 yards per carry. And then Glenn Davis would, of course, finish second. Going back to 1945, we have only seen teammates finish in the top three five times. But in four of those seasons, the school with two candidates did end up winning the award. Could Colorado, an unranked team, actually keep this rolling and get their two contenders invited to New York? Hey, it's going to be a tough field. USC has Caleb Williams. Washington has Michael Penix. North Carolina has Drake May. Ohio State's Marvin Harrison is phenomenal. Michigan running back Blake Corum. They are all making a strong case. So we're going to have to see if Colorado's duo can keep their case up. Hey, next week on the Dose, we are going to be bringing you some Daily Dose power rankings. We're going to have them in college football. We're going to have them in the NFL, even though it's very early. And we are even going to be looking in Major League Baseball, where those playoffs are nearly here. So be sure you tune into the Dose next week, and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thanks for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
You like male sports?
Oh, sure. Speed walking, ballroom dancing, rhythmic gymnastics, extreme choir.